Do you swear affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I hear these words spoken again and again in this trial. And every time I hear those words spoken, I cringe a bit, because they represent a false promise to the jury. Jurors aren't hearing the whole truth and nothing but the truth. Instead, they are hearing some of the facts, some of the time. Don't get me wrong, I'm not blaming the judge or any of the lawyers in this case. They all seem to be honorable men and women. But there is something wrong with a system that claims to revere truth, but so often withholds it from the ears of jurors. I was thinking about that today when I heard an actor read the testimony of Joseph Glenn into the record. Joe, who went by the name Ace, was Jennifer Lewis's stepfather. For example, here is some testimony Rock Island police officer Wayne Johnston gave.
Did they tell you what clothing he was wearing?
They did.
And what clothing was he wearing?
They told me, Sherry told me he had on a black and blue sweater and blue stonewashed jeans.
And what was your understanding of Stanley's connection to Jennifer Vine Dom?
Well, when I asked her, Sherry, is there anything else you can tell me about this? And she said, well, we had a company, a black man named Stan. She said that he stayed there about an hour and gave Jennifer a dollar bill to go to the store and buy gum.
They had a guest in their home and they didn't even know his last name or how to reach him? Is there something missing in this equation? I think so. It doesn't explain the nature of Stanley Liggins' relationship with Joe and Sherry Glenn. Because Joe Glenn's whereabouts are unknown, an actor portrayed him in Wednesday's testimony and read his testimony from a previous trial into the record. During this portrayal, it was explained that Joe met Stanley Liggins shortly after Joe's son Damien was born. During Liggins' visit to the Glenn home, Joe said there was another man present named Nate, whose last name was also unknown to him. Just listen to the testimony and see if you can figure out what is being left out.
When did you first meet Stanley Liggins?
When I brought Damien back from the hospital.
Your wife wanted you to meet him?
Yes.
She knew him before?
Yes.
And where did you go to see him?
At his room.
And you know where that was at?
I believe it was the Hillside Inn in Rock Island, a motel.
And did you take Damien there?
Yes, we did.
Did you take Jennifer there?
Yes, we did.
Did you go into the hotel?
Me, Sherry, and Damien went into show Stanley, Damien, and Jennifer stayed out in the front, playing on the balcony in front of the house.
What did Mr. Liggins do when he came to the house?
Nate said him and Stanley had some business to take care of. So we sat around the living room for a couple of minutes, and then Stanley and Nate went out on the front porch, in front of the porch, to talk the private business.
In case you haven't figured it out, or listened to previous episodes of Suspect Convictions, testimony in an earlier trial indicated that Stanley Liggins was wholesaling cocaine to Joe and Sherry Glenn, who were selling it for him on the west end of Rock Island. But jurors in this trial will never hear this because the Iowa Supreme Court ruled after the first Liggins trial that it was overly prejudicial and threw out the conviction. Last year, Judge Marlita Grieve ruled that jurors could not hear that Stanley Liggins was out on bond for sexually abusing a different 9-year-old girl at the time of Jennifer's murder. He was later convicted in that case. Prosecutors had hoped to have this information admitted because they contend it showed a pattern of behavior. One thing that is unknown is whether Stanley Liggins will testify in this trial. Robert Hirschhorn, an internationally known defense attorney, said Liggins to stay away from the witness stand. Here's a question for you. In the first two trials, the defendant did not testify. If you were a defense attorney in this case, would you put him on the stand or not?
Nope.
Okay, why?
So the burden of proof always rests with the prosecution. It never shifts to the defense, ever, ever, ever. In Russia, it shifts to the defense. In China, it shifts to the defense. But in America, in a democracy, the burden of proof never shifts to the defense. I wouldn't put the defendant on because I don't think the state can prove their case. I don't think they have sufficient, reliable evidence to convict this man. And there's no reason for him to testify. Absolutely none.
What are the downsides if he did?
Well, some of that other ugly stuff could come into evidence. I don't know what the judge's rulings were or what the context is. I'm just telling you, I understand people want to hear from a defendant, but I wouldn't risk it with this one. Look, this guy's got baggage in his background, and baggage can convict you. This is exactly how the prosecution got, what, two prior convictions on this guy, right? Not once, but twice he's been convicted.
So the other thing,
right?
Yes.
The other I would not recommend that this guy testify.
An interesting quirk of this trial is that it is unclear whether Liggins' past conviction could be used to impeach his testimony. If he were to take the stand, Iowa law allows some convictions committed in the preceding 10 years to be brought up. But in a retrial such as this, is it 10 years before today or 10 years before Jennifer Lewis's murder? There's insufficient case law to know what a judge might rule. If it were 10 years before Jennifer's death, Liggins' armed robbery conviction could almost certainly be brought in. But if it's 10 years before today, there'd be no crimes to bring up because Liggins has been behind bars for the last 28 years and has not accumulated any more convictions.
I'm Benjamin Payne with WVIK Quad Cities NPR. I'm speaking with reporter Scott Reeder. He's covering the criminal retrial of Stanley Liggins in Waterloo, Iowa. Liggins is being charged with the murder of Jennifer Lewis. She was a 9-year-old girl from Rock Island whose body was found near a school in Davenport in 1990. Now, Scott, when we spoke on Tuesday evening, you said one of the big witnesses to testify on that day was Don Schaefer. He's the former Davenport police chief. In 1990, he was lead investigator in the case of Jennifer Lewis. So in Tuesday's proceedings, Schaefer testified about a key witness in the case who, as it turned out, was a paid police informant in more than 80 other cases. Schaefer testified that he did not know this witness was an informant, but nevertheless, it was not communicated to Liggins' attorneys back in the initial trial, which is largely why we're having the current retrial of Liggins. So you said Schaefer was due back on the stand for Wednesday's proceedings. What more did he say?
It was more cross-examination from the defense. I thought he presented himself very well. It's hard to know. I mean, I think he was able to show that he was following protocols that weren't just Davenport Police Department protocols, but were protocols that were pretty universal and considered, by accrediting organizations that they were doing the right things and following appropriate procedures and everything else as far as how they handled their confidential informants and whatnot. So overall today was a stronger day for the prosecution than yesterday was.
And were there any other witnesses who testified today?
Yeah, there sure was. There was a scientist who came in, and he had worked for the makers of Hefty garbage bags. And he talked about doing chemical analysis work of the garbage bag that Jennifer's burning corpse was found in. And being able to identify, essentially what type of garbage bag it was and that sort of thing. It was not a particularly common garbage bag at the time. It was one that was not available retail at all. It could be bought through wholesale sellers. So it was an extra strong bag. It was, the coloring on it was a little different. It was gray on one side, black on the other. It had titanium in it, which supposedly makes it stronger, but also is used for pigmentation purposes in the chemical process. And so he was able to say, yes. And he also pointed out this was an exact match for the type of plastic garbage bags used at the motel where Stanley Liggins was living. Now, that in itself isn't a slam dunk because, you know, there's other places in the community where you can get these garbage bags, I mean, that are businesses that have them. But it's not like they could go to the grocery store or to Walmart and buy one off the shelf because they weren't available that way at that time. So that, I thought that was pretty compelling testimony. But you don't know how many of these were available and at that time in the Quad Cities. So it's hard for, I think, jurors to, you know, make an informed judgment. You know, is this a 1 in 1,000 type of garbage bag, or is this a 1 in 100 type of garbage bag? You know, so those are some things that that struck me. But the other thing that was really interesting was, because we're bringing this case to court 28 years after the murder, there's a lot of people who have died or were unavailable that are testifying in proxy. Essentially, people are reading the testimony from prior trials during this trial and portraying them before the jury. And so I found that interesting. And today, with Jennifer's stepfather, Joseph Ace Glenn, testified in proxy. And he cleaned up pretty nice, I'll say that, because the guy who was reading was wearing a suit, which I don't think Ace would ever be caught dead in. He presented the stuff probably in a more articulate manner than Jennifer's stepfather would have. But Ben, when somebody reads somebody else's words, it gets awfully boring. And I saw one juror in the back row nod off at one point during the trial. And I have to admit it, I nodded off a little bit too at the back. And as I was telling you beforehand, Ben, your dad is Joe.
I get that.
I've been a journalist for 30 years. I've never nodded off on an assignment before today, but I've gone over these transcripts so many times myself. I knew that there was no surprises, and all of a sudden I probably nodded off for 2 or 3 minutes during the testimony. So I felt a little embarrassed, but woke up and I thought, nobody noticed. And then when the break came, somebody came up and was giving me a hard time about it. So anyway,
Yeah, I'm just curious, who are these people who are portraying these deceased witnesses? Are they just random people they pull off the street, or are they employees of the courthouse? How does that work?
Mostly, they're a mix of things. Like when, during the first day of the trial, when the arson investigator, I think his name is Jim Carpenter, nice guy, he used to look like, I always thought he kind of looked like Daniel Day-Lewis when he worked for the Davenport Police Department or Davenport Fire Department. You know, he's died a number of years ago. So they had his replacement in the person who holds the job that he had come and read it for on his behalf. And he was wearing the firefighter uniform and everything else. They had, I think the guy who was reading for Joe Glenn today was a police officer. Sometimes they'll have, I think, some other attorneys that happen to be in the courthouse to read some testimony. It's just kind of a mix of people, but I think they're people that have connections with either the defense or the prosecution teams.
And now let's talk about the jury a bit. A lot of the times in high-profile cases, there are certain pieces of information that are withheld from the jury. So in this case, is there any information that's being withheld from the jurors that you think was interesting and noteworthy?
And a lot of information being withheld from the jurors. For example, during the first trial, it came out that the reason that Joe and Sherry Glenn, Jennifer's parents, knew Stanley Liggins is he was selling them cocaine for them to resell in Rock Island. And that was the nature of the relationship. And the first conviction got overturned by the Iowa Supreme Court, who said, no, that's prejudicial. That information will make people vote to convict based not on the evidence before them, but on other activities that he was involved with. Now, I think that's kind of goofy, to be honest with you, because it really explains the relationship between the Glenns and Stanley Liggins. But so when the testimony was given today, that was all cut out. And so I'm listening to this guy portraying Joe Glenn, and he's saying, I didn't know Stan's last name, but he came by once a week. And I'm thinking, and would interact with the family. And I'm thinking to myself, how many people do you know, Ben, that drop by your house once a week and interact with you that you don't know their last name or their phone number? But this was the kind of relationship that was going on between the Glenns and Stanley at the time. And it's like, that's just weird.